coming up on New York Now, a new hole opens up in the state budget.
This is the most serious revenue shock that the state has faced in many years. We can't say that enough or emphasize that enough. That $2.3 billion figure, frankly, Governor, I think could get worse before it gets better.
And groups gather to announce their opposition to the state's proposal to legalize recreational marijuana.
My message is very simple. It's very direct. We took an oath as sheriffs of New York State to keep our communities safe. And by legalizing marijuana, our communities will become less safe.
It's next on New York Now, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Brother, can you spare $2.3 billion?
First up, our look at headlines.
In a rare joint press conference between two men who have not always seen eye to eye, Governor Cuomo and State Controller Tom DiNapoli gathered in the Red Room Monday to announce a shortage of personal income tax receipts to the total of $2.3 billion.
This is the most serious revenue shock that the state has faced in many years. We can't say that enough or emphasize that enough. That $2.3 billion figure, frankly, Governor, I think could get worse before it gets better, based on the numbers as we see them. And I think the message really is a word of caution. Recognizing that this is a reality and a problem is a way for us to get ahead of it. And I think it would be fair to say that there certainly is time as part of the budget process for us to manage the reality of what these numbers are. The numbers, of course, over time could get better. We know that April is also a time of a great deal of activity around the April 15th date. So it's not all gloom and doom, but it is a message of very, very serious concern, very, very serious words of caution. The issue of salt that the governor has spoken to very clearly, not just today, but on many occasions, I think is a prime factor for the impact that we're seeing, the negativity in the revenue in January. We certainly have all heard anecdotally, as the governor pointed out, of people who say they're going to change their legal address. And I think these numbers show that, in fact, that is probably a big part of the picture.
The governor placed a large part of the blame on the salt provision in the new federal plan that caps the state and local tax deduction at $10,000.
Much of the concerns about salt were hypothetical. Well, maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. It is no longer hypothetical. New York State was the number one target under the salt provision. Salt was an economic civil war. It literally restructured the economy to help red states at the cost of blue states. That's exactly what it did. It was a diabolical political maneuver in the tax code that actually raised taxes on Democratic states, lowered taxes on Republican states, and financed the Republican state tax cut from the Democratic states. I mean, if people actually understood what it was that they were doing, there would have been an uprising. We are now seeing the effect of it. It's no longer in the abstract, no longer maybe this, maybe this, maybe this. We are now seeing in the receipts the effect of salt. The receipts are down. They're down in both the withholding component and they're down in both the estimated payments that we're seeing coming in. The variance from the projections appeared abruptly in late December. They've continued through January. Typically 39 to 46% of the PIT receipts would have come in during this period. The collections are down to about 30% of the target. That is about a $2.3 billion drop in revenues. $2.3 billion as a drop at this point in revenues is as serious as a heart attack. DOB's economic and receipts forecast had anticipated a year-over-year decline. We budget conservatively. We've set up reserves. But this is worse than we had anticipated.
We'll have more on this at our Reporters Roundtable. Budget hearings continue this week in Albany. Health Commissioner Howard Zucker and Medicaid Director Donna Frescatore testified on Tuesday. Manhattan Senator Brad Hoylman asked the two how this new $2.3 billion hole would affect their budgets.
And wondered if your proposal for a 3.6% increase in Medicaid and healthcare transformation spending will be impacted by that? And have you been briefed by the second floor on the impact of these looming cuts and how it will impact your specific budget requests?
So we are always in conversation with the second floor about these issues and the specifics of where some of those cuts will come from. Donna, do you want to touch on some of the?
I don't know that I have anything, Senator, to add to the announcement by the governor and our budget director. The Medicaid funding that was included in this executive budget is consistent with the statute on the Medicaid global cap, which increases spending, as you know, by the 10-year rolling CPI, which is 3%, plus the transformation distribution funds that I talked about earlier. That comprises the 3.6% increase.
So you don't know if that announcement yesterday will impact any of this?
I don't have any further information at this time.
That's shocking to me that you come here today that could be a massive recalibration of your budget. Am I not correct? This is our last chance to really speak to you about your departmental budget. So we're left in the dark on that issue.
The following day, State Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Elia went before lawmakers. She admitted she wasn't happy with the total for education spending in this year's budget. In her 4 hours, she was asked about many things, including teacher evaluations, measles vaccines, and Capital Region Assemblywoman Mary Beth Walsh asked her about school safety.
Not only are school resource officers helpful in a time of crisis, but can be a positive presence at schools. Would you be supportive of funding to provide every school with a school resource officer? Or are there other lower cost alternatives that you would support? You could just talk about that.
Yes. Before I became the commissioner here, I had the experience of being the superintendent of a very large district, 275 schools, and a staff of about 32,000 people. I will say to you that school safety incorporates a number of different areas. And thinking that having a single person on a campus makes it safe is really, I think, a false positive. Clearly, we know the importance of climate and what is happening in the school as a really critical piece in having school safety. And we are, in fact, asking for an $8 million budget increase to support technical assistance centers to train schools on how it is they interact with students so that, in fact, the students are part of the safety agenda in the school. Secondly, I am in support of attempts and work that's done. We have had a number of projects come to us about the hardening of schools, making sure that that the doors have the appropriate locks on them, that there is controls at the front doors. Those are, I think, very important factors in looking at what is happening to keep safe schools. I'm also totally supportive, and I've worked closely our office with the safety committee for the state that was started about 8 or 10 years ago before my time, but includes individuals from the other agencies. So our police and our local police, as well as our state police and sheriffs. I think it's extremely important that everyone is on the same page. All of those components are critical. There is no one magic way to make sure every school is safe. And I would say to you that no matter what you do, if you do have someone that is on your campus as a officer, they have to be trained and they have to be very, very focused on the appropriate environment of a campus that has children.
And finally, several organizations, including the New York State Sheriff's Association and New York State Association of Chiefs of Police, held a press conference Thursday to denounce the legislation that would legalize recreational marijuana.
My message is very simple. It's very direct. We took an oath as sheriffs of New York State to keep our communities safe. And by legalizing marijuana, our communities will become less safe. That's a clear, strong message. We know, just by looking at some of the statistics, we know that the biggest one that stands out is that people will die as a result of folks making the destructive decision of using marijuana and then operating a motor vehicle. It's the deputies, the police officers, the men and women of our agencies that are going to be knocking on the door at 3 o'clock in the morning, telling a mom or dad that their child has just died as a result of a motor vehicle accident because someone made the destructive decision to smoke marijuana and then operate a motor vehicle. And to have a clear conscience, I cannot stand quiet and allow this to move forward without doing all we can to stop this proposal to legalize the use of recreational marijuana.
A Long Island chief of police noted the governor's recent 180 on marijuana.
A question for Mr. Aresta. You said that in 2017, marijuana was a gateway drug. Now it's not here in 2019. Is that a reference to how Governor Cuomo described it in 2017?
Absolutely, yes. Out of his word, out of his mouth directly. And we've had no proof that it is not. We all still know, parents still know, it's a gateway drug. They try cigarettes, marijuana, then they go to the opioids and continue onto harder stuff. That's just, the studies have shown that over the years. Nothing has been proven differently.
While Assembly Speaker Carl Hasey has expressed doubts whether the legislation to legalize the recreational use of marijuana can be included by the budget due date of April 1st, the governor has been more optimistic. All right, time now to turn our attention to the analysis of the week's news. And for that, we send it on over to my partner from the Times Union, Casey Seiler.
All right, and now for analysis of the week's news, I'm happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Anna Grunewald from Politico, from my own paper, The Times Union, Rick Carlin, and Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. So, where is the sofa that New York will find $2.3 billion in?
Well, the governor does have a rainy day fund, and there is a lot of money hanging out there from the bank settlements from the last recession. I think they have about $2 billion, if I'm correct on that. So there actually is money. But yeah, the governor Monday announced there's a $2.3 billion deficit because tax receipts were down in December and January, and he's blaming SALT, the federal tax changes, and saying that rich people are leaving the state, although he didn't offer any concrete evidence of particular people who are leaving. It seems more like it's a theory with him right now.
And we had a piece, I know one of our colleague Brian Nearing had a piece about how people have been leaving, at least upstate New York, for decades.
Moving companies
track this. And
But they're not the millionaires, right?
No, but there's been a trend here towards the Sun Belt. Yeah. Which has been going on.
Well,
nationally.
That's true. That's a different trend. I think the governor was talking about millionaires, the wealth, and billionaires leaving the state, and saying that's the reason why receipts are down.
They make up a disproportionate amount of the tax base, also. The rich pay a huge amount of the income tax revenues in New York State.
But it seems more clear that it was the stock market drop in December and January, and richer people didn't have as much income, so they didn't pay as much in taxes.
Right.
And. While he said that the budget he put forward is not going to be feasible, various lawmakers and agency heads have not offered any suggestions for cuts that they might make in other places. They seem to be thinking that this is not going to be a problem.
Yeah, and we pressed him on it in the press conference that he had. A number of reporters, including me, said, well, what do you have to cut? And he didn't mention anything, which is really curious, because usually when there's a deficit, the governor comes out and says, I have a plan. Mm-hmm. We have to cut this. We're going to have to hold back on this spending increase. Going to have to maybe restructure taxes. But he just refused to give any kind of answer.
He did say, I think, within the next 30 days, the amendments that will be offered to the budget budget will reflect the new forecast.
You wonder if this really did take them by surprise to some extent without a plan B right there at hand.
It's sort of the DeWitt rule of budget negotiations that you've mentioned before.
Mm-hmm.
When we're flush with cash, that's when the negotiation is difficult because everybody has sort of a project that they want it to go to. When times are tight, things tend to go a little bit better. So could you say this is perhaps an effort to tighten up the purse strings?
Yeah, maybe so, but everybody has to agree times are tight. And I don't think that the lawmakers really are taking this budget deficit seriously. They think the governor's just trying to control them because they want to spend more money on a lot of programs, and he doesn't want to.
They're not there yet. We were, you know, at the education hearings the other day, they grilled the education commissioner for 4 hours. No one mentioned the deficit. Later in the day, one of the union leaders mentioned, oh, it's interesting that there's a budget deficit just before our hearings. And usually the education lobby is going to say, oh, it's not as bad as we think it is. So you can see that there's a crack there. There's that divergence is already starting to some extent.
But again, no lawmakers really asked the commissioner or anyone else about it. They didn't bring it up. I think the commissioner brought it up maybe once and then a union member, and that was it. No talk.
Yeah. Well, so it's kind of sudden in a sense. And also the fact that Tom DiNapoli was there side by side with the governor. Those two don't always get along,
as we know. No, they've been feuding for years.
And Tom DiNapoli is very close with the big unions, the teachers' unions, et cetera, and he's not one to say, to put a scare into them unless this could be real. That's what it tells me.
The big question is, though, is it a blip or will there be more tax collections in April? So it's really kind of too early to tell. So I think, you know, maybe lawmakers maybe there is some wishful thinking there. They're like, well, we don't want to deal with this now because, hey, we've got all these great programs. We're finally in power. So let's just, you know, wait to April and see what
comes
in.
That's when the budgets do.
Right. Yeah, well,
yeah, exactly.
Little details about deadlines.
Well, maybe they can be done with the budget before the April tax
or not.
Are coming.
Yeah, who knows? Right? Yeah. Yeah.
Rick mentioned the budget hearing, which was an epic, almost 12 hours. What were the other big takeaways from that?
Almost universally, everyone said that the governor's proposal for education spending, which is about a $1 billion increase, would not be enough. I think that's a common refrain every single year.
Every year, yeah.
But this year, they are united in saying that most of the increase should come through foundation aid, which is how the state funds its schools. And in a very, very different way of thinking, Cuomo says that foundation aid should be a thing of the past, that it is no longer applicable. And that was really fascinating to see a bunch of different groups come together and say, no, we're all united behind this is the way that the state should move forward.
This goes back to the now decades old AQE lawsuit, Alliance for Quality Education Campaign for Fiscal Equity. Mm-hmm. It was a lawsuit dating from the 90s saying New York City doesn't get its fair share. That led to the foundation aid, you know, a decade ago as a result of a court ruling. And some of the advocates are saying, well, the court says there's still money that has to go out to New York State schools. And Cuomo's saying, no, that's history. It's up to us now to set the budget. And that's the big divergence. Well, what does the court say? What does the legislature and the governor say?
Well, you guys are the education experts. It's your beat. What do you think? I mean, has the court order been fulfilled? I mean, Cuomo's recently been saying it's ghosts of the past and let's move on. And it just seems like everybody else in the education community says no.
The trouble is that the courts are always reluctant to delve too much into the legislation. They can make a ruling about money, but they're not going to set the budget going forward. And that's a fundamental problem. And that's where I think Cuomo is correct in that sense, that, you know, now it's up to the governor and the legislature to fund the schools.
I think the courts have said that the original lawsuit has been fulfilled, but then foundation aid, which was a product of that lawsuit, is still lacking. There's still a lot of money left under it.
The argument that is that it's not really a formula, that it's essentially a system whereby, you know, powerful lawmakers can direct added funds to their own districts. Isn't that a fair summary?
That's the other big argument that's gone on forever. You have the formula that says X amount goes to each school district, and then you get into the horse trading where lawmakers argue for more money for their district. It used to be the Long Island Republicans that were very effective in bringing home money to their schools. Now it's the Long Island Democrats who are going to feel like they have to prove to their constituents, I can still bring home this bacon too.
So there's a lot of
backroom horse trading that goes on behind these formulas. The formulas are not the final product.
That's a lot of the reason why people live on Long Island, is for the schools. The school, right. So I think that the new Democratic senators, they're going to have to deliver too. So that's always been
and
the pressure in negotiations, that even though their schools might be wealthier than the poorest schools, they still have to bring back more money.
Their constituents expect
that. Yes, they do.
While
they're
throwing around million-dollar or billion-dollar deals, we should mention the opposition from Senate Democratic Deputy Leader Mike Gennaris to the Amazon deal, which affects his district in Queens particularly, has been kept up. This week, the situation elevated somewhat when Leader Andrew Stewart Cousins nominated Gennaris to the Public Authorities Control Board, which is a little-known five-member panel. The leaders can recommend, but the governor has to approve the members. And the big question now is whether Gennaris will get the governor's approval to sit on a board that potentially could veto or obstruct the Amazon deal.
Yeah, it's a deliberate provocation by Andrea Stewart Cousins to Governor Cuomo, kind of showing her power, because Cuomo and Gennaris have never gotten along that well. Gennaris is an opponent of Amazon, which Cuomo he negotiated the deal and has been defending despite opposition, although lately he's been blaming Amazon more for the negative publicity about the deal, but he wants to stick to it, and it is a confrontation that is brewing.
It seems like, you know, for Cuomo, he probably views this as one of his landmark achievements, bringing Amazon to New York City, and all of a sudden, there's all this opposition, and there's opposition coming from a legislature that he has to deal with, and it's a dilemma, yeah.
That's right.
We also had the governor out this week proposing congestion pricing as a way to fund the capital plan for the MTA, in particular the deteriorating subway system. The governor called the MTA a disgrace and a governmental Frankenstein. It's a disgrace and a governmental Frankenstein that he has more influence on than any other elected official, and he's been governor for 8 years.
Yeah, but it's been doing very badly and has a bad reputation, so I think he's just continuing to try to distance himself from it, saying, well, I don't control it, nobody controls it, and that's why everything's so bad, because if he takes responsibility now, then people are going to be, in New York City, are going to be constantly mad at him over the deplorable state of the subways and everything else that's going on. So he keeps trying to distance himself, and the reporters keep, pointing out that, yes, he controls the MTA, but he feels like this must be working for him.
It's kind of a new tactic for him this week, just blatant ridicule, saying the MTA is doing terribly and look at all these poor ideas that they had.
Yeah, well, your organization pointed that out in a story where he actually seemed to be mocking, like, the subway workers who scrub the floors there. He had a picture where he made fun of them because they were using Tide detergent, which I guess there's a whole backstory to that, but it just really seemed kind of off to, kind of make fun of people like that who were, they're hard working, whatever you want to say about the subways. They're doing their best.
Congestion pricing, as you know, has been tried. It's been floated before, and it's failed in the legislature. It keeps getting shot down. A lot of the lawmakers in the outer boroughs, they don't want to have their constituents pay more to get into the city. So there's another layer of problem that the governor has to deal with.
The governor's argument is that about 25% of the people who would have to pay congestion pricing come from other states, from Connecticut, from New Jersey. So put it off on them.
It's worked in other cities around the world, right? London, Stockholm. Yeah. So, it's not like a new concept, I guess.
All right. Well, that is where we're going to have to leave it. Thanks very much to Anna Grunwald from Politico. Please come back. Rick Carlin from the Times Union and Karen DeWitt from New York State Public Radio. And now we'll kick it back to Matt at the desk. All right. Thanks, Casey. A big point of discussion this week was Donald Trump's State of the Union address. We want to know what you think. Let us know at nynow.org. Last time around, we asked if you supported the new gun control measures passed by the state legislature recently, and 3/4 said yes. Jenny in Larchmont, watching on WNET, said they are common sense laws to keep us all safe from gun violence. Ron in Cobleskill agreed, despite the NRA nonsense, the sad truth is that no hunter worth a damn ever needed more than 3 shots, and I am an upstate rural gun owner. And finally, Dave in Western New York, out by Letchworth State Park, voted no, saying, just more overreach by the New York liberals controlling all aspects of our lives. We appreciate all those who reached out this week. To do so again, just head to nynow.org.
newyorkstateme.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs and follow links to us on social media, including Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, where our handle is at nynow_PBS. You'll find a link to the Capital Confidential blog as well. It's also available at timesunion.com. All right, Casey, a couple of big things going on next week. The annual Tin Cup Day, where the big mayors from across the state, Bill de Blasio, among many others, come to Albany to essentially, you know, beg for more money in the state budget.
Right. And usually, of course, de Blasio faces heated questioning from Republicans up until December controlled the state Senate. Now he, of course, will be facing a majority Democratic. I'm sure he's going to get hard questions from Republicans, but he's got a little bit more support in terms of what is going to be enacted with the Democratic majority.
May not be the marathon session we've seen in the past. Also on Wednesday, the long anticipated and long asked for sexual harassment hearing.
Yeah, there's going to be a lot of attention on this. Needless to say, the legislature does not have clean hands, you know, in its own house on this issue. But of course, these hearings are going to cover the subject statewide and, you know, corporate America, you name it.
Yeah, I imagine it will be very compelling.
Indeed. All right. Well, that is all the time we have this week. For New York Now, I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.